Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Thursday, October 2nd, 2014. And since we were all like talky yesterday and didn't get through everything we really wanted to talk about, I brought John and Kelly back today so that we could continue our discussion and hit the topics that we weren't able to get to yesterday. So, Kelly, how are you?
I'm well, Jeff. How are you?
I'm good. And John, how are you?
I'm good. Back together for the first time.
That's right. Back together again for the first time. All right. So the way I see it, today is kind of a ranty pants fest because the topics just lend themselves well to getting all ranty. The first thing that I wanted to go into is not Apple specific, but it kind of ties into Apple with the way the media handles different features and potential issues. And this is the whole thing with the Samsung Galaxy Note 4 having the gap around the display and like a big enough gap that you can slide a business card on end between the glass of the display and the metal or plastic of the phone body. And so the deal is, the way I see it, that we have an aesthetic issue and potentially a design issue, and Samsung is saying this is a feature, not a flaw. Mm-hmm. And that the gap can grow over time. And, oh, by the way, your phone will be creaky and rattly. Don't worry. That's a feature.
Stuff might rattle around inside, but it's cool.
Right. And so the media, by and large, is not flipping out over this.
Virtually being ignored.
Right. And then in comparison, it doesn't matter what the feature is or potential issue is that comes up on a new iPhone. The media jumps all over that.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, we have the bent
because
phone thing.
We have a name, Gapgate.
Oh, see, I prefer Ben Gapsy. But the thing to me about this is that it's really frustrating because this is something a lot of people have noticed about the Galaxy. So, like, lots of the Samsung phones that have this gap in them, there's pictures of them with business cards in them, Jeff, like you said. There's bookmarks. People have taken a bookmark and tucked it in the side there. It's crazy. I saw one picture that was a credit card. So, like, this is not an insignificant gap. It's not like, oh, you'll only see it if you're really looking. That's not what's happening. But because Samsung put it in the user manual, like, big old friggin' gap over here, like, that makes it okay somehow. And yet, 9 people had issues with a new iPhone that got bent and apparently had no issue returning them because I haven't heard anybody getting any grief over it. But this has caused idiots to go sashaying into Apple stores and destroying property. Let's see if this one bends. And I'm really confused about why it is clearly an indicator of end times if an obese American puts a phone in his back pocket and sits on it all day long and then wonders how come it bent. And then when Samsung does something that could actually – when Samsung gives you a phone with this opening in the side where stuff can get in. Let's be honest. Now, granted, my elbow won't fit in there, but if I still lived
in – I don't know. You're kind of small, Kelly. It might.
Okay, that's true. But if I still lived in the Oregon desert, there's a lot of sand there, as evidenced by the fact that it was the Oregon desert. So if I lived in a place that was particularly sandy – I might be concerned about getting that crap inside my phone.
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, please. Where is the technical determination that the gap is susceptible to that kind of problem?
If you can fit a credit card in that space, I'm pretty sure a grain of sand will wiggle through.
Well, so what? I mean, where is the technical determination that this is a problem? I think it's a statement about the current kind of thinking that happens, you know, the simpleton thinking that says, oh, there's a gap. So that means that there's a technical problem.
John, I've done too much tech support to not see only see sunshine and rainbows at the end of anything. All I see is people having problems, all the ways this could go wrong, and what's going to happen to those people because they're going to be chained to that phone for 2 years.
I see it in two ways. There's a reason the gap is there. I think Samsung probably backed itself into an engineering corner. They probably realized they needed the gap in order to be able to manufacture it the way they wanted to manufacture it, or for heat expansion or something like that. So they're trying to make the best of a difficult engineering situation.
How come no iPhone of mine ever needed a gap in it?
Well, Apple takes a different engineering approach. Maybe they didn't have to do it because of the way they make the phone.
Okay, how come my Nexus 7 tablet doesn't have a gap in it? How come I've never seen a Nexus 5 with a gap in it?
So you're stating that it's a conspiracy that Samsung screwed up and they're trying to make the best of it.
Yeah. I think Samsung got it wrong in this case. And most of the time I don't really care what Samsung's up to. I mean, in the time since we started the podcast, they've released a new phone. So it's really not like most of the time Samsung puts a lot of stuff out there to see, you know, what works, what doesn't work. Like they had all kinds of feature phones. I don't know anybody who could give you an accurate accounting of Samsung's lineup at the moment. And I know people whose job it is to know this stuff. So I'm confused by that. But I also think that they have screwed this up. And I think that they're trying to spin it. And when they put it in the manual, that's their way of trying to make it like, oh, it's all right. You know, it's like those tech notes we used to see back in the day where like Nintendo recommended blowing on the cartridge. And there was a point when Apple wanted you to reseat the RAM by lifting your computer 2 inches off the table and then letting it go.
Apple 3 also. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so it's not like this is the only person that ever did this, but I think Samsung screwed up on this point.
Maybe, but you know, if you drop your iPhone into sand, there's going to be grit into the 3.5 millimeter jack and into the speaker ports and in the Lightning connector. You know,
and I would expect that to happen.
Yeah, so it's one of those things where people see something, it looks out of the ordinary, they start fantasizing about potential problems, don't do any engineering about how bad the gap is, start dropping business cards into it, publishing photos on the internet. Doesn't it seem an awful lot like Bengate, where people are just trying to make a fuss? Let's just let the phone go out into the market, put a case on it, see what happens. It's all going to blow over.
Well, in many cases, or for many points, I believe you're right, John, that this is a lot like the whole thing with people flipping out over bent iPhones, or how you have to hold a smartphone so that you don't lose your signal, and just all these different things. The big difference I see here is that the mainstream media, as soon as they heard about iPhone antennas, as soon as they heard about bendable iPhones, they were like, "Oh my God!" and freaking out, and it was huge.
Right.
And they sensationalized it, and they have the potential to do the same thing with Samsung, and they're like, "It's Samsung, whatever." And I think that actually goes back to people love to bag on Apple when they can. Originally, because they were the underdog, and now because they're the top dog, and I think that Apple ends up being held to a higher standard by the media in general, and because of that, they're always looking for anything that they can latch on to bag on, and they aren't doing that for Samsung,
right? Which is why it was also the end of times when Apple made stuff in China, in a factory, and wasn't that unbelievably horrifying? Well, you know what? When that factory isn't making iPhones, that factory is making Xboxes. That factory is making Samsung phones. That factory is making all these other things. And that didn't seem to bother anybody, that all their other little pieces of glass and plastic with USB ports all came from the same place. Yeah, whatever. Apple! It's ridiculous.
There's a conceit here, a hidden conceit. You know, in the earlier times, you'd pick up a copy of, say, Consumer Reports, and you'd read about a car that had a tendency to flip over under hard steering, you know, and there was some engineering done and some videos made. And so Consumer Reports would say, you know, we don't recommend this car. So the hidden conceit here is we're going to tell you in a titillating headline something about this new product that is going to change your decision process, and you may not want to buy this device after all. The iPhone can bend, the Galaxy Note 4 has a gap. And we're going to illuminate you about, because we're such brilliant journalists, about a defect here that could totally change your decision about buying this product. And then that floats around for a while and everybody forgets it. And then the company goes on and sells millions of the devices.
Yep, that's pretty much how the cycle works. You're right. Yep. Okay, I'd love to keep talking about this, but we have another rant that we can get into.
Oh, goody.
And John, I think for this one, you'll be a little less positive than you were with the Galaxy thing. I want to talk a little bit about what's happening with iTunes 12 in the Yosemite beta. Now, iTunes 12 is something that if you're part of the public Yosemite beta, you have access to, or if you're a developer, you have access to. And I've been seeing some complaints cropping up online about concerns about where Apple is taking this application, and difficulty using iTunes 12, features not being there, or at least not being in a place where people have been able to locate them easily, and I figured that you guys might have a little something to say about this.
I do. So let me get started, Kelly.
Okay.
Don't get me started, but I'm going to get started. I there have been some complaints for a long time that iTunes is bloated, that it needs to be factored. It needs to be factored in terms of its functionality, the device control, purchasing through the store, management of your music and playlists. And my first suspicion is that Apple is working on something like that. But in order to get where they need to go through this intermediate stage. And that involves eliminating the sidebar. In iTunes 11, by default, the sidebar was hidden, and you had to do a little magic to bring the sidebar back.
And there was much wailing and gnashing of teeth when it looked like it disappeared.
It's the same in iTunes 10 as well, that the sidebar was an option, but it was disabled by default.
Right. Now it's gone in iTunes 12. And the question in my mind is, I just downloaded it the other day, so I can't wait to start digging into it. The first blush reaction I had is, oh, darn, this is bad. I'm not going to like this. But my second reaction was, maybe this is Apple's movement towards trying to get us to do things differently in a strong arm kind of way. And maybe we won't like it. I don't know yet. But what I want to do is I want to try to figure out all the things that I do with iTunes 11 and then try to implement those activities and operations in iTunes 12 and see if I can accomplish the same goal. If I can, then it's just simply a matter of a learning curve. You used to do it that way, now you do it this way. It's not too bad. But if there's reduced functionality, if there's a class of things that we used to like to do with iTunes 10, 11 that we can no longer do because Apple doesn't want us doing those things, then I'm going to be very upset, and I'm going to go into print with a serious rant and lean on Apple pretty hard about that. So that's where I am right now.
Well, John, I think you were pretty charitable in that assessment, because you say iTunes need to be factored, and I say it needs to be fed to a wood chipper.
You're going to go Fargo on this, aren't you?
Full on. People who remember me from other podcasts will know that it may be difficult for me to try to get through this in a G-rated way. Here's the deal, okay? I think Apple is trying to strong-arm me into doing things their way, and apparently their way is to stop using iTunes altogether, because that's really the point I'm at. And I want to take this moment to shamelessly beg and plead with the guys at Panic, who are just over there. They're downtown. I'm outside of downtown Portland. They are in downtown Portland. You guys, Audion, I will pay any price if you will give me a way to manage my music and play my music, and that's all I want to do. because that's all I ever wanted iTunes to do. And then iTunes said, well, now you can buy music. And I said, okay, well, sorry too, I guess. And then they said, we also have this whole other device called an iPhone, and you're going to use iTunes to manage that too. And so I do. And then so they bolted on the store, and then they bolted on the syncing, and then they bolted on the store for the new thing that you sync. Right. And then we had Ping. Don't even. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Oh, Ping! Don't get me started.
And then we got a whole nother device which needed its own set of syncing protocols with the iPad, and on and on and on. And now the entire thing is held together by bubblegum and bailing wire. But it makes Apple like $11 trillion to be. Having iTunes installed everywhere so people can buy things, even though most people really don't use it. This was one of the things that we always used to talk about before, was how hard it was to have an iPhone or an iPad if you didn't have a computer to go with it. And now that's not really the case anymore. And I think Apple is trying to actively discourage me between mysterious errors and continuing to take stuff out that I used to actually use. Mm-hmm. And screwing Jeff's remote app and every single mystery error that I've heard people report to me when I asked about the sidebar, like, is there, I wanted to know if there was some secret terminal command that I could enter, you know, possibly a black magic spell that if I just entered it in the proper order into the command line would bring the sidebar back to me in 12. And so far, all I've heard from people is I can't even get it to sync my phone. So I haven't dug into it that far yet. So I'm really at the point where if they are so insistent that my experience on my Mac and my experience on my iPhone and iPad are going to be similar, here's how they need to be similar. They need to go swiftly and without mercy, take an axe to iTunes and chop off the sync utility and turn it into a little utility like image capture is a utility. They need to chop off the store and make it its own thing. And then they need to let iTunes go back to what it does, which is play music. Right. Maybe I can buy music there, because with iTunes Radio, that seems like a real possibility. And that needs to be the end of it. I really, really need that. And I thought we might get that with Mavericks, that maybe this time would be the time when they finally realized we got to just burn it all down and start again with 10.9. And then I thought 10.10, well, they didn't do it in Mavericks because they had all this other stuff happening with battery life and what have you. So totally 10.10 is going to be, you know, because they keep talking about convergence and everybody talks about how your Mac and your phone are going to be the same. So totally this is going to be the thing that happens. So I waited and I waited and I sat there through WWDC and I watched the keynote and I looked and I waited. And then they were like, you can take a phone call on your Mac. And I'm like, oh, thank God, this is going to be the time when they finally do the thing that I've wanted them to do for like 4 years. And they still didn't do it.
See, I see this as a great third-party opportunity for a developer to step in and say, hey, I've created this really great app that you can use in lieu of iTunes, and it connects into your iTunes database as if it were iTunes. And so you can continue to use the App Store and everything else, and it just works. But look at this great interface, and I would buy the crap out of that.
Yeah, all I want it to do is back up. That's like the biggest thing I needed to do.
I wanted to give you some applause here because that was a wonderful rant. I was watching the blood pressure meter on your iPhone go sky high. So I was kind of worried about you there for a second. But yeah, everything you said is exactly how I feel about iTunes as well through the years.
Uh-huh.
So I'm with you on this 100%.
And let me also point out that iTunes on Windows is the thing that prevents Mr. Kelly from buying a Mac, because he has to use iTunes on Windows to manage his iPhone and to manage his iPad. And he loves his iPhone and he loves his iPad. And whenever he has to use iTunes for Windows, he says, why would I switch? The company that made this, I don't want to put them in charge of my entire computer.
That's a problem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, I know lots of people do, but, you know, that's, I know lots of people go, well, my iPhone is great and my iPad is great, so I'm going to go get a Mac. But because he uses iTunes to have to manage everything, he absolutely won't. It's probably the biggest hurdle that's keeping him from switching. If I handed him a new Mac, he probably wouldn't want it because of iTunes.
Jeff, do we have Craig Federici's email address? We need to email
Hair Force
him
One at Apple. Video
an audio copy of this podcast so Craig can listen to Kelly's awesome rant.
I'll work on getting this in his hands. And we're out of time, so we have to wrap up. And Kelly, I'm so proud of you. Epic rant that stayed family friendly.
I tried very hard. I'm glad it worked out.
I'm so very proud of you. And John, thank you for your insight on Samsung and iTunes. And it was great having both of you back yet again. You guys rock.
Awesome.
Cheers.